Muhammad Rasulullah by Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi. Chapter 8. Yathrib before Islam. Difference between Meccan and Medinite societies. Yathrib had been earmarked by Providence to shelter the Messenger of God after his migration and to bring forth not only the first Islamic society but also to serve as an irradiant shelter for the universal call of Islam. The great honor accorded to the society makes it necessary to know its distinctive features, its physical, social, and cultural conditions, the Arab tribes living there, their mutual relations, the economic and political manipulations of the Jews, and their fighting strength, as well as the way of life sustained by its fertile lands. Various religions, cultures, and communities flourished in the city side by side. It could not be compared with Mecca, which was dominated by one faith and one cultural pattern. The details given here, albeit briefly, depict the state of affairs in Medina when the Prophet made his debut in that city. The Jews. The view preferred by the historians about Jewish settlements in Arabia at large and those in Medina in particular is that by the date from the 1st century AD, Dr. Israel Welfinson writes that after Palestine and Jerusalem were laid waste in 70 AD and the Jews dispersed to different parts of the world, a number of them made their way to Arabia, according to a Jewish historian who was himself present at the siege of Jerusalem and had led the Jewish units on several occasions. The Arab sources also corroborate his statements. Three Jewish tribes, Qaynuqa, An-Nadhr, and Qurayza, Banu Qurayza, were settled in Medina. The number of adults belonging to these tribes was about 2,000. Qunayqa were estimated to have 700 combatants. An-Nadhr, too, had almost the same number, while the grown-ups of Qurayza were reported to be between 700 and 900. These tribes were not on good terms with one another, and very often they came to blows. Dr. Israel Welfinson says, quote, Banu Qurayza were set against the rest of the Jews because they had sided with Banu Khazraj in the Battle of Buad, in which Banu Nadir and Banu Qurayza had inflicted a crushing defeat and massacred Banu Qaynuqa, even though the latter had paid blood money for its prisoners of war. The bitterness between the Jewish tribes continued to persist after the Battle of Buad. When Banu Qaynuqa subsequently fell out with the Ansar, no other Jewish tribe came to their aid against the Ansar. The Quran also makes a reference to the mutual discord between the Jews. Quote, And when we made with you a covenant, saying, Shed not the blood of your people, nor turn a party of your people out of your dwellings, then you ratified our covenant, and you were witnesses thereto. Yet you, it is who slay each other and drive out a party of your own people from their homes, supporting one another against them by sin and transgression. And if they come to you as captives, you would ransom them, whereas their expulsion was itself unlawful for you. Unquote. The Jews of Medina had their dwellings in their own separate locations in different parts of the city. Banu Nadir and Banu Qurayza forced Banu Qaynuqa to vacate their settlement in the outskirts of the city. They took up their quarters in a section of the city. Banu Nadir had their habitation in the highest parts, some 4 or 5 kilometers from the city, towards the valley of Bathan, having some of the richest groves and agricultural lands of Medina. The third Jewish tribes, Banu Qurayza, occupied a vicinity known as Mehzur, a few kilometers to the south of the city. The Jews of Medina lived in compact settlements where they had erected fortifications and citadels. They were, however, not independent but lived on confederate clans of the stronger Arab tribes, which guaranteed them immunity from the raids by the nomads. Predatory incursions by nomadic tribes being a perpetual menace, the Jewish tribes had always sought protection as one and the other chieftain of the powerful Arab tribes. Religious affairs of the Jews. The Jews considered themselves to be blessed with divine religion and law. They had their own seminaries known as Midras, which imparted instructions in their religious and secular sciences, law, history, and Talmudic lore. Similarly, for offering prayers and performing other religious rites, they had synagogues, where they normally put their head together to discuss their affairs. They observed the laws taken from the Torah, as well as many more rigid and uncompromising customary rules imposed by their priests and rabbis, and celebrated Jewish feasts and fasts. As, for example, they kept on the 10th day of the month of Tishri, the fast of atonement. The finances. The financial relations of the Madianite Jews with other tribes were mainly limited to lending money on interest rates, on security of personal property. In an agricultural region like Medina, there was ample scope for money lending business, since the agriculturalists very often needed capital for the purpose of cultivation. The system of lending money was not limited merely to pledging personal property as security for repayment, for the creditors very often forced the borrowers to pledge even their women and children. The incident relating to the murder of Ka'ab bin Ashraf, narrated by Bukhari, bears testimony to the prevailing practice of money lending. Muhammad, quote, Muhammad bin Maslama said to Ka'ab, "Now we hope that you will lend us a camel load or two of food." Ka'ab answered, "I will do so, but you shall pledge something with me." The Muslim said, What do you want?" Ka'ab answered, "Pledge your women with me." They said, "How can we pledge our women with you, the most beautiful of the Arabs?" Ka'ab said, "Then pledge your sons with me." The Muslims replied, "How can we pledge our sons to you? They would be abused on this account, and the people would say, 'He has been pledged for a camel load or two of food.' This would disgrace us. We shall, however, pledge our armor with you." Unquote. Such transactions produced, naturally enough, hatred and repugnance between the people who take the mortgage and the people who give it. Particularly since the Arabs were known to be thin-skinned where the honor of their women was concerned. Concentration of capital in the hands of the Jews had given them power to exercise economic pressure on the social economy of the city. The stock markets were at their mercy. They rigged the markets through hoarding, creating artificial scarcity and causing rise or fall in prices. Most of the people in Medina detested the Jews owing to these malpractices and profiteering, which were against the grain of the common Arab. With their instinctive tendencies of acquisitiveness, the Jews were bound to follow an expansionist policy as pointed out by D. Lacey O'Leary in the book Arabia Before Muhammad. Quote, "In the 7th century, there was a strong feeling between the Bedouins and the Jewish colonists, because the Jewish colonists, by extending their agricultural area, were encroaching upon the lands which the Bedouin regarded as their own pastures." Unquote. The Jews, being guided by nothing but their overweening cupidity and selfishness in their social intercourse with the Arab tribes, Aus and Khazraj, spent lavishly, though judiciously, in creating a rift between the two tribes. On a number of occasions in the past, they had pitted one tribe against the other, with the result that both would be worn out and economically ruined. The only objective the Jews had set before themselves was how to maintain economic hold over Medina. For many centuries, the Jews had been waiting for a redeemer. Their belief of the Jews in the coming of a prophet, about which they used to talk with the Arabs, had prepared the Aus and Khazraj to give their faith readily to the prophet. Religious and cultural conditions. The Jews of Arabia spoke Arabic, although their dialect was interspersed with Hebrew, for they had not completely given up their religious language, which was used by them for educational and religious purposes. In regards to the missionary activities of the Jew, Dr. Israel Welfinson says, quote, "There is less uncertainty about the opportunities offered to the Jews in consolidating their religious supremacy in Arabia. Had they so wished, they could have used their influence to their best advantage. But as it is too well known to every student of the history of the Jews, they never made any effort to invite other nations to embrace their faith. Rather, for certain reasons, they had forbidden to preach their religion to others." Unquote. Be that it as may, many of the Aus and Khazraj and certain Arab tribals had been Judaized owing to their close connections with the Jews or ties of blood. Thus there were Jews in Arabia who were of Israeli descent with an addition of Arab mixtures. The well-known poet Ka'b ibn Ashraf, often called An-Nadr, belonged to the tribe of Tay. His father was married in the tribe of Banu An-Nadr, but he grew up as a zealous Jew. Ibn Hisham writes about him, quote, Ka'b ibn Ashraf was one of the Tay of the subsections of Bani Naban, whose mother was from Bani An-Nadr, unquote. There were customs amongst the pagan Arabs that if their sons or anybody died in infancy, they used to declare to God that if his next son remained alive, he would entrust him to a Jew for bringing him up on his own religion. A tradition referring to this custom finds place in Sunan Abu Dawud's. Quote, Ibn Abbas said, any woman whose children died used to take a vow that if the next child remained alive, she would make him a Jew. Accordingly, when Banu Nadar were deported, they had sons of Ansar with them. They said, we would not forsake our sons. Thereupon the revelations came, there is no compulsion in religion. Unquote. Aus and Khazraj, the two great Arab tribes of Medina, Aus and Khazraj, traced a common descent from the tribe of Azd, belonging to Yemen, from where successive waves of emigrants inundated the northern regions from time to time. The exodus was brought about by a variety of reasons, some of which were unstable political conditions in Yemen, Abyssinian aggression, and disruption of irrigation systems supporting agriculture after the destruction of the Marib Dam. However, both the Aus and Khazraj came down to Medina after the Jews. The Aus settled in Awali, an area in the southeast of Medina, while the Khazraj occupied the lands in the central and northern parts of the city. The northern part of the city being low-lying, nothing intervened between the habitation of the Khazraj and the Haratha Wabra in the west. The Khazraj consisted of four clans, Malik, Adi, Mazin and Dinar, all collaterals to Banu Najjar and also known as Taim al-Lats. Banu Najjar took up the residence in the central part of the city where stands the Mosque of the Prophet. The Aus, having settled in the fertile, cultivable lands, were neighbors of more influential and powerful Jewish tribes. The lands occupied by the Khazraj were comparatively less fertile, and they had only Banu Qaynuqa as their neighbors. It is rather difficult to reckon the numerical strength of Aus and Khazraj with any amount of certainty, but an estimate can be formed from the different battles in which they took part after the Prophet's emigration to Medina. The combatants drafted from these two tribes on the occasion of the conquest of Makkah numbered 4,000. When the Prophet emigrated to Medina, the Arabs were powerful and in a position of play to first fiddle. The Jews, being disunited, had taken a subordinate position by seeking alliances either with the Aus or the Khazraj. Their mutual relationship was even worse, for they were more tyrannical to their own co-religionists in times of warfare than the Arabs. It was due to the antipathy and bitterness between them that the Banu Qaynuqa were forced to abandon their cultivable lands and take up the profession of artisans. The Aus and Khazraj too often came to war with each other. The first of these encounters was the Battle of Sumair, while the last one was the Battle of Buaz, was fought 5 years before the immigration of the Prophet. The Jews always tried to sow dissension between the Aus and the Khazraj and made them run foul of one another so as to divert their attentions from them. The Arab tribes were conscious of their activities. The fox was the popular nickname that was given to the Jews. An incident related by Ibn Hisham on the authority of Ibn Ishaq sheds light on the character of the Jews. Shad bin Qais was a Jew, old and bitter against the Muslims. He passed by a place where a number of the Prophet's companions from Aus and Khazraj were talking to each other. He was filled with rage to see the unity between the tribes So he asked Jewish youth friendly with the Ansar to join them and mention the Battle of Buath and preceding battles and to recite some of the poems concerning those events in order to stir up their tribal sentiment. The cunning device was not useful. The two tribes had been at daggers drawn in the past, their passions were aroused, and they started bragging and quarreling until they were about to unsheathe their swords when the Prophet came with some of the Muhajireen. He pacified them and appealed to their bonds of harmony brought by Islam. Then the Ansar realized that they had been duped by the enemy, which was a Jewish youth. The Aus and Khazraj wept and embraced one another as if nothing had happened. Physical and geographical conditions. At the time when the Prophet migrated to Yathrib, the city was divided into distinct sections inhabited by the Arabs and the Jews, with a separate district allocated to each clan. Each division consisted of the residential quarters and the soil used for agricultural purposes, while another part they were used to have their strongholds or fortresses-like structures. The Jews had such 49 strongholds in Medina. Dr. Israel Welfinson writes about these strongholds, quote, "The fortresses were of great importance in Yathrib, for the people belonging to a clan took shelter in them during the raids by the enemy. They afforded protection to the women and children who retreated to them in times of war. The safe holds were also utilized as storehouses for the storage of food grains and fruits, for the enemy could easily pillage them in the open places. Goods and arms were kept in the fortresses, and caravans carrying merchandise used to halt near them, for the markets were usually held along the doors of the fortresses. The strongholds also housed the synagogues and educational institutions. The costly goods that were stored in the fortresses show that the religious scriptures were also kept in them. Jewish leaders and chieftains used to assemble in their fortresses for consultation or taking decisions on important issues, which were sealed by taking an oath on the scripture," unquote. Defining the word Utam, as these fortresses were called, Dr. Welsfinson continues, "The term konets in Hebrew, to shut out or to obstruct. When it is used in connection with a wall, it denotes such windows as are shut down from the outside but can be opened from the inside. The word is also expressive of a defensive wall, and therefore we can presume that the Utam was a name given by the Jews to their fortresses. They had shutters which could be shut from the outside and open from the inside," unquote. Yathrib was thus a cluster of such strongholds or fortified suburbs which had taken the shape of a town because of their proximity. The Quran also hints to this peculiar feature of the city in the words, quote, "That which Allah gives as spoils unto his messenger from the people of the townships," unquote. Again, another reference to Medina signifies the same peculiarity in the Quran, quote, "They will not fight against you in a body except in fortified villages or from behind walls," unquote. Lava plains occupy a place of special importance in the physical geography of Medina. These plains, formed by the matter flowing from the volcanoes, which cools into rocks of burnt basalt of dark brown and black color and of irregular shape and size, stretch out far and wide and cannot be traversed either on foot or even by horses or camels. Two of these lava plains are more extensive. One is to the east and is known as Harata Waqim, while the other lies in the west and is called Harata Wabraha. Majduddin Firozabadi writes in his book that there are several lava plains surrounding Medina. The two lava plains on the east and on the west are virtually made the city a fortified safe hold which can be attacked only from the north and not from these two trenches. On the other side, or the southern side, the oasis thickets and clumped date palm groves, as well as the fortified houses of the densely populated area, defend the city against incursions by an enemy. The strategic location of Medina was one of the factors responsible for its selection as the emigrants' new home. Haratha Waqim, to the east of the city, dotted with numerous verdant oases, was more populous than Haratha Wabaraha on the west. When the Prophet emigrated to Yathrib, the more influential Jewish tribes like Banu Nadir and Banu Qurayza were living in Haratha Waqim to the east, which was more prosperous, alongside some of the most important clans of Al-Aus, such as Banu Abdul Ash'al, Banu Zufar, and Banu Haritha, and Banu Muawiyah. The eastern plain lavas passed under the name of Waqim because of a locality of the same name in the district occupied by Banu Abdul Ash'al. Religious and social conditions. By and large, the inhabitants of Medina followed the Quraysh, whom they had held as to be the guardians of the holy sanctuary and the matrix of their religious creed as well as social ethics. Pagan, like other Arabs, the population of Medina was by and large devotees of the same idols as worshipped by the inhabitants of Hijaz and of Makkah in particular, in addition to a few regional and tribal deities considered to be personal or private gods of the particular clans. Thus, Manat was the oldest and the most popular deity of the inhabitants of Medina. Al-Aus and Khazraj rendered honor to it as co-partner of God. The idol was set up on the seashore between Makkah and Medina at a certain place on the lava plains. Al-Lat was the favorite god of the people of Taif, while the Qurayshites revered Al-Uzza as their national god. It was so because the people of every place had a particular patron god to which they used to be emotionally attached. If anybody in Medina had a wooden replica of an idol, he normally called it Manat, as was the idol kept in the house by Amr bin Jumah, the chief of Bani Salama in Medina, known before his conversion to Islam. Ahmad bin Hanbal has related a tradition from Urwa on the authority of Aisha, which says, quote, "The Ansar used to cry Labbaik to Manat and to worship it near Mushalal before accepting Islam. And anyone who performed pilgrimage in the name of Manat did not consider it lawful to go around the mounds of Safa and Marwa. When the people once inquired from the Prophet, O Messenger of Allah, we felt some hesitation during the pagan past in going around Safa and Marwa. God sent down the revelation. As Safa and Marwa are amongst the indications of Allah." Unquote. However, we are not aware of any other idol in Medina equally glamorized as Al-Lat or Al-Manat, Al-Uzza and Hubal, or venerated like them, nor was there any idol set up in Medina which was paid a visit by the people from the other tribes. Medina did not appear to be bristling with idols like Makkah, where one used to set up an idol in every house, and vendors offered them for sale to the pilgrims. Makkah was, all in all, the prototype and symbol of idol worship in Arabia, whereas Medina simply trailed behind it. In Medina, people used to have 2 days in which they engaged in games. When the apostle came to Medina, he said to them, "God has substituted something better for you, the day of sacrifice and the day of breaking fast." Certain commentators of the tradition hold the view that the two festivals celebrated by the people of Medina were Navroz and Mehrajan, which were perhaps been taken over by them from the Persians. Aus and Khazraj came of a lineage whose nobility was acknowledged even by the Quraysh. The Ansar were descendants of Banu Qahtan, belonging to the southern stock of Arab Ariba, with whom the Quraysh had marital affinity. Hashim bin Abdumanaf had married Salama bin Amr bin Zaid of Banu Adi, which was the clan of Khazraj. Nevertheless, the Quraysh considered their own ancestry to be nobler than that of the Arab clans of Medina. On the day of Badr, when Utbah bin Rabia, Shaybah bin Rabia, Walid bin Rabia came ahead of their ranks and challenged the Muslims for single combat, some youth of the Ansar stepped forward to fight them. The Qurayshite warriors, however, asked for those who were, and on coming to know that they belonged to the Ansar, replied, "We have nothing to do with you." Then one of them called out, "Muhammad, peace be upon him, send forth some of our own rank and blood to fight us." Thereupon, the Prophet ordered, "Advance, O Ubaidah bin Harith, advance, O Hamza, advance, O Ali." When the three were up at them and told their names, the Qurayshite said, "Yes, these are noble and our peers." The self-conceited Quraysh used to look down upon farming, the occupation taken up by the Ansar, owing to the physical features of the city. We find an echo of the same egotism in what Abu Jahl said when he was slain by two Ansar lads who were sons of Afra. Abu Jahl said to Abdullah bin Mas'ud, "Although he was nearing his end, would that somebody else than a cultivator had slain me." Unquote. Economic and cultural conditions of Medina. Medina was a veritable oasis. The soil warranted a systematic cultivation and hence its population was given over to farming and gardening. The main produce of the city consisted of grapes and dates, of which there were numerous groves, sterile and unsterile. Two or more palm trees occasionally grew out of a single root. Cereals and vegetables of different varieties were cultivated in the farms, but the date was the chief item on the menu of the people, especially in the times of drought, for the fruit could be stored for sale or exchange with other necessities. The date palm was a queen of Arabian trees and the source of prosperity to the people of Arabia, providing them with solid food and fodder for the camels. Its stems, barks, and leaves were also utilized in the construction of houses and the manufacture of other goods for daily use. Countless varieties of dates were grown in Medina, where the people had evolved through experience and experimentation methods to improve the quality and produce of the dates. Of these, one was the distinction made between the male pollen and the female pestiles of the date palms and the fertilization of the ovules, which was known as tabir. Medina was a leading agricultural center. It had also a flourishing mercantile business, but not of the same magnitude as that of Mecca. The barren rocky valley of Mecca allowed no other occupation except to set out with merchandise caravans regularly during the summer and the winter seasons for earning their livelihood. Certain industrial pursuits were restricted to the Jews of Medina. They were probably brought these crafts to Medina from Yemen, as for instance, Banu Qaynuqa practiced the trade of goldsmith. Wealthier than other tribes inhabiting Medina, the house of the Jews were flush with money, abounding with silver and gold. The soil of Medina is excessively fertile because of the volcanic matter that goes to make the surrounding lava plains. The town stands in the lower part of the valley where water courses running from the higher altitudes irrigate the agricultural land and date plantations. A verdant wadi, well occupied with water and abounding in gardens and vineyards, then known by the name Aqiq, was the pleasure spot of the Medina's population. There were many wells scattered all over the town. Almost every garden had one, which it was used for irrigation, for the subterranean water was found in plenty. The vineyards and date plantations enclosed by garden walls were known as hayats. The walls had sweet and plentiful supply of water, which was conducted for the orchids by means of canals or through lift irrigation. Barley was the main cereal produced in Medina, while wheat occupied secondary place, but vegetables were grown in abundance. Transactions of different types were in vogue, some of which was retained by Islam while others were reformed or forbidden altogether. The coins in circulation in Mecca and Medina were the same as already discussed in the section dealing with Mecca. However, as the inhabitants of Medina had to transact their business in food grains and fruits, they had more of other dealings with the measure of capacity. These measures were mud, sa, farak, araq, and wasak. The measures of weight prevalent in Medina were dirham, shiqaq, danak, quratz, nawats, ral, kinder, and awqiya. Medina had a fertile soil, but it was not self-sufficient in food grains and had to import some of the foodstuffs required by it. Flour, refined butter, and honey were brought from Syria. Tirmidhi relates on the authority of Qatada bin Noman that the staple diet of the people of Medina consisted of dates and barley, but those who were rich used to purchase flour from Syrian merchants for their own consumption, while other members of the family had to make do with dates and barley. This report brings to light the culinary habits as well as the disparity in the standards of living of the rich and the poorer sections of the people of Medina existing before the migration of the Prophet. In their character and disposition, the Jews have remained unchanged in every place and age, bringing to pass almost the same course of human affairs. In Medina, they constituted the affluent class, while the Arab tribesmen, like other gullyless Bedouins, were not given to trouble their heads about the future or to feather their nests for rainy days. In addition to it, the generosity was in their blood, which manifested itself in sparing no expense in the entertainment of the guests. Naturally enough, they were often forced to borrow money on interest from the Jews by pledging their personal property. The livestock raised by the people consisted for the most part of camels, cows. The camels were also employed for irrigating the agricultural lands, and such camels were known very clearly in Medina. Medina had several pastures, of which the two largest ones were very well known. The people of Medina used to put their flocks for grazing on these pasture lands and also obtain firewood from them. They reared horses as well, though not on the same scale as did the inhabitants of Mecca, for military operations. Banu Sulaym were renowned for their horsemanship, although they used to import their horses from other regions. Medina had a number of markets. The most important amongst them was the one conducted by Banu Qaynuqa, which was stocked with silver and gold ornaments, cloth and other handiwork, cotton and silk fabrics. Variegated carpets and curtains with decorative designs were normally available in these markets. Attar of different varieties and musk were also sold in these markets. Similarly, there were shopkeepers who sold quicksilver and ambergris. Numerous forms of business transactions had come into practice, some of which were upheld by Islam while the others were forbidden. The dealings had that come into vogue were clearly mentioned in multiple books of accounts. Certain people belonging to Aus and Khazraj had also their hands in lending money at interest, but their numbers were comparatively few in comparison to the Jews. The social and cultural life of the common people in Medina was, thanks to their refined taste, fairly well advanced. Double-storied houses were common in Medina, and some had even attached kitchen gardens. The people were used to drink sweet water, which had often to be conducted from a distance. Cushions were used for sitting, and the household utensils, including bowls, drinking vessels, were made of stone and glass. Lamps were manufactured in different designs. Bags and small baskets were used for carrying articles of daily use and corn from the fields. The dwellings of those who were well off, particularly the Jews, were well stocked with many different types of household furniture. The jewelry worn by the women folk were bracelets, armlets, anklets, earrings, rings, golden or gem necklaces, etc. Spinning and weaving were among common domestic pursuits in which women spent their time in Medina. Sewing and dyeing of clothes, house building, bricklaying and stone crafts were some of the manual arts already known to the people of the city before the Prophet immigrated there. Yathrib's advanced and composite society. The hijra of the Prophet and his companions from Mecca to Medina was in no wise an immigration from a town to any hinterland known in the name of Yathrib, but from one city to another. The new home of the immigrants was at the same time dissimilar in many respects from the town that they had left. It was comparatively smaller from the former, but the society there was much more complex in comparison to the social life of Mecca. The Prophet was therefore expected to come across some problems of different nature. The town was peopled by men subscribing to different religions, with dissimilar social codes, customs, and having divergent cultural patterns. The task now presented to him was to overcome the difficulties arising out of a heterogeneous community and how to unite them under one creed and faith. It was a difficult assignment which could be accomplished only by a prophet commissioned and blessed by God with wisdom, foresight, firmness of purpose, and capacity to blend the conflicting ideas and ideals into a new concept which could usher the dying humanity into a brave new world. And above all, the Savior have had a lovable personality. How very correctly had God set forth the service rendered by the benefactor of the human race. Quote, "And as for the believers, has attuned their hearts. If you had spent all what is in the earth, you could not have attuned their hearts. but Allah has attuned them. Lo, He is mighty and wise. Jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.